Hello, and welcome to the podcast edition of Ron Kaplan's Baseball Bookshelf, your source for news, reviews, previews, and interviews on books, movies, music, and collectibles on the national pastimes. These podcasts feature interviews with authors, artists, musicians, and filmmakers. You know the slogan, if it fits on a bookshelf, it fits here. Hello again, everybody. We're back after having been out for a bit of technical difficulty with a bulky five-year-old computer. But today we're bringing you a special treat. We're bringing you a Mets doubleheader. We have interviews with two authors of Mets books. The opener, if you will, features David Ferry, who published Total Mets, the definitive encyclopedia of the New York Mets' first half century. And in the nightcap, we'll be speaking with Greg Prince, co-host of the Faith and Fear in Flushing blog and creator of the four-volume collection The Happiest Recap, 50 years of the New York Mets as told in 500 amazing wins. The first volume covers the years 1962 to 1973 and is currently available. So let's get started. Here's David Ferry.
David Ferry, welcome to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Oh, nice to be here. Thanks very much.
So this is your first book. This is pretty ambitious for a first book.
Actually, it was... It's now about one-fourth the size of its original condition. We had to make a lot of cuts because by the time I was ready to send the manuscript to Triumph Books, it was about 2,800 pages.
Yikes.
Initially, it included bios on every player who had played for the Mets during the first 50 years, and also 2 to 3 line recaps of every single game they played.
Wow.
Unfortunately, we had to whittle the game-by-game stuff out, and we cut the bios down to not necessarily the top 50 players in Mets history, but I like to consider them to be the most memorable. That's why a guy like Jay Hook would be in there.
So listeners know, this book already weighs in at more than 700 pages.
Yeah, it's like a Big Ten media, football media guide, I guess.
And when I say weighs in, I mean this is a very hefty book.
Yeah, the promotions people at Triumph have already complained that, when they have to move the boxes, they're breaking their necks.
So how did you come up with the idea for this?
Well, I work nights at the Associated Press. I come home at 2 o'clock, and I was just spending, a couple hours unwinding, watching television before I went to bed, and I figured it was a waste of time. Let's do something creative and maybe write something that I have some working knowledge of, and that would be the Mets, and it just morphed into this major project. And after 4.5 years, it's on the shelf.
So 4.5 years, did you always mean it to mark the 50th anniversary, or it just worked out that way?
That's basically how it worked out. I didn't know how long it was going to take me to write the book. In fact, I didn't know if I would finish. I didn't tell anybody except my immediate family that I was working on the project for about a year. Mm-hmm. And after that time, I figured, this is doable. It was also a lot of fun to write and doing the research. And presto, I just morphed into this huge behemoth.
Well, I was going to say, as a longtime Mets fan, this was a labor of love rather than just a labor.
Absolutely. And one thing that I really enjoyed about the project was talking to these ballplayers, particularly the older ballplayers. I had the fortune of speaking with 16 of the 62 Mets, and all of them were just tremendous, funny, insightful, had great stories to tell, particularly about Casey. Just a great bunch of guys, and I would think more than anything, my relationships with some of the players has been the best thing that's come out of the book. I'm still on good terms with Ron Swoboda, Rod Gasper, George Theodore, a couple players that I still remain in touch with. Ron Hunt invited me to a party in Manhattan earlier this year, and we swapped messages about a week ago.
So I think that's the ancillary benefit of doing a project like this. Is it besides the actual product, you do establish these relationships?
Yeah, and it was fun. The tough part was cold calling these guys because I tried to get some help through the Mets to locate ball players, and you know, they're very protective of the trademark, and I can understand that since they didn't know me from Adam. So I wound up just making cold calls and arranging interviews myself.
And how did you get the contact information that way?
Well, let's just say there are certain sources you can go through on Google, and you'd be surprised how many players are available in such a manner. I think I interviewed about 125 players, and virtually all of them I got either, you know, just through cold calls, or I had AP stringers get in touch with these guys. Mostly, you know, the stringers were able to get in touch with the current day Mets.
And what specifically do you do for AP, David?
I'm a sports writer. I, you know, cover all sports for AP Broadcasting, and used to actually cover the you know, baseball and football playoffs. But you know, we've downsized a little bit.
Mm-hmm. So you need to be doing more stuff because I see you're associated with the Washington Capitals.
Yeah, I worked for them for I was their assistant PR director for 4.5 years after interning for them. That was a lot of fun, but. Yeah, after a while you realize you have to actually make money.
So. Now, you mentioned the Mets being protective of their brand. Did you need to get approval from anybody, from the Mets or Major League Baseball, to do something like this?
I initially set out hoping that the Mets would you know, welcome this project with open arms. And I had some contact with Jay Horowitz, their you know, VP of Public Relations. But it just seemed that they weren't interested in a book that they couldn't fully control, and you know, I wasn't allowed to get headshots. If I wanted them, you know, I'd have to pay for them, and they were quite expensive, which is why a lot of the photos in the book are pictures that I shot and a coworker, Oscar Gabriel, shot. And you know, as I mentioned, I didn't have access to the players. I had to do that myself. So in terms of getting a lot of help from the Mets, they were very cordial, but in the end, it turned out that I really didn't need their help. So.
Well, that works out very well for you. And I have heard that from other writers who wanted to do Mets projects. I wonder if that's endemic to the Mets or to the New York area, or would you think you'd have this trouble with the Kansas City Royals?
You know, it depends. It's funny. After finishing the Met book, I've since started on an Islanders book, and the Islanders have been very helpful when I've asked them. Not only have the Islanders been helpful, but you know, other NHL teams. And you know, getting back to the Mets book and cooperation, I got tremendous cooperation from other teams when I needed interviews for the book, and they knew, you know, specifically what the interviews were going to be for, and had no problem. The Dodgers were wonderful. The Pirates, the Diamondbacks, the Nationals, you know, the Phillies got a lot of help from other teams, and that went a long way toward making the book what it is.
Now, obviously, there have been other team encyclopedias done before. Did you study any of those to get the basic format?
Well, when I signed on with Triumph, I was already about 3+ years into writing the book, and Triumph had. I don't want to say they put out homogenized books, but they put out team encyclopedias.
No, they absolutely do. They have several series of books that are basically the same thing.
Right.
Whether it's the 162-0 series, where a specific team wins every single game, theoretically, based on their history, or similar books of that nature. Yeah, they do follow format because the format works.
Right, and they sent me a copy of Total White Sox, which I looked at, and I saw at that point what they wanted, and you know, realized that what I had produced was way too much. So, yeah, we started to downsize it toward what Total White Sox was, and I think in our case, the biographies, there aren't as many, but they are longer. I think. We go a little bit deeper into the players, not just during their Mets careers, but what they did with teams before and after, and also I tried to let the fans know what these guys have been up to since baseball. And in many respects, like Jay Hook, their post-baseball careers are more fascinating than their ball careers.
Oh, sure. I mean, you figure, like, even the best of players are basically playing for 15 or so years, and they're going to be non-players much longer than they're going to be players, God willing.
Sure, sure. And yeah, I bring up Hook again. Here's a guy who was an engineer and went on heading up several divisions with major corporations. And, you know, now he lives up north, and, yeah, he's got his kids and grandkids, and refers to himself as a gentleman farmer. He's just relaxing and enjoying life.
Now, you say when you went to Triumph, did you try other publishers for this before Triumph?
I sent feelers out to 15, I think it was 15 publishers, and I knew Triumph was very strong. We get their catalogs every year at DAP, and I saw what they do, and I was like, oh boy, I would love to be part of their organization, and they were among the 15 that I sent to. I only got 3 replies back. One was a maybe, one was a no, and then there was Triumph, who said, yes, we'd be very interested in doing it.
No, that's for an etiquette point of view. It's kind of sad that the other 12 couldn't be bothered to just reply.
Well, it's very difficult when you're a first-time author to get your foot in the door. And I realized if I went into the situation without an agent, it was going to be even more difficult. But fortunately, Triumph was interested.
Now, again, getting back to the fact that you had so much more material beforehand, how long did it take you to whittle that down into this manageable form?
Well, it's funny. I would say about a year ago, we figured, okay, we can do 125 players. And then we realized, no, that's going to take up the whole book by itself. And it went down to 175. And now you're getting to the point where, you know, you no longer have room for Willie Mays. You don't have room for Nolan Ryan.
Wow.
You know, you're trying to figure out, boy, you know, who are the top guys? And some of my favorite bios got cut. George Theodore's, Gaspers.
The colorful
most
characters.
Of the 60, yeah, most of the 62. Guys like Larry Foss or Ken McKenzie, you know, guys you wouldn't think twice about. But if you read their bios, you think, oh, this is a pretty nice read. Well, they all got cut. And that was kind of disappointing. But what we're going to wind up doing, there are plans in the spring of 2014 to publish another book that will include all those bios and just the biographies.
Okay, I was thinking, I mean, certainly authors nowadays have their own websites where they have additional material that might not make it into the book, but is germane to the theme of the book, that, you know, certainly those other bios can find a home someplace.
Sure, sure. It's something I thought about, but I just don't know if I have the time to maintain a website. I have enough trouble having finding the time to look at other Mets websites.
There are a lot of them.
There are some tremendous ones out there, and they all have good stuff. But if I'm lucky, I'll catch one or two a day, and that's about it.
So, do you have a favorite Mets book?
Oh, God, probably Peter Gollenbach's book that he put out in 2002, Amazing, is one of my favorites. And you would have to go way back to Leonard Coppett's book. He wrote an encyclopedia on the Mets that came out, I think, originally 1970, and then he did an update after the 73 playoffs. And I was about 12 years old when the second version came out. And I said to myself, this is the book that everybody should have. You know, a year-by-year account. It had team photos from every season. It had statistics and stuff like that. And in many ways, what I've produced is kind of a blown-up, steroid-induced version of what Leonard put out. Obviously, you know, I mean, Leonard's writing is fantastic. So in that respect, I would have to take a back seat to Leonard.
Well, he was always a favorite author of mine for all his baseball stuff. And Gollenbach's book was an oral history of the team. I believe it was called The Amazons,
right.
Followed by some very long subtitle. But that was coming out at a time roughly when books like that. He also put out a book about the Yankees. They put out a similar book about the Dodgers, you know, following in the footsteps of Kahn's Boys of Summer, when nostalgia was all the rage.
You know, speaking of which, Maury Allen's book, After the Miracle,
yes,
is another one,
yes,
of my favorites.
Uh-huh.
The 20-year look back.
And this is the 50 that you finally decided on. Was that totally your decision?
Yes. They gave me the final say in it. And it's fine. For whatever reason, we wound up publishing 49 bios instead of 50. And I had tried to squeeze Wally Backman in there. I mean, that's how ridiculous the list got. I couldn't get Wally Backman in there. I think what happened is that we put in the changes too late, and we weren't able to get Wally in there. But again, you know, he'll be part of the next book.
So what was your criteria for the final list?
I think memorable Mets. They didn't necessarily have to be the best. It's a reason. I think another factor is that, since I'm 50 years old, I kind of have more fond memories of the older players, which is why a Roger McDowell is part of the bio section and not Armando Benitez.
Mm-hmm.
John Franco is in there. Tug McGraw's in there. Jesse Orozco's in there. But, your Braden Loopers and such, they didn't make the cut.
So there's definitely a personal bias as opposed to their statistical output or their other contributions on the field.
Yeah, it's not an intentional bias, but it just turned out that, I figured, well, these are the guys I'd want to read about, so, let's put those in the in the book. And, as I mentioned, Wally was one of the guys that just didn't make the cut, and that's one of the regrettable things I have about the book.
One of the inserts I got many years ago with either a program or a yearbook was a poster at the time of every Met who had played on the team.
I believe that was in the 81 yearbook, yeah.
And I guess it folded out to a little more than a standard 2-foot by 3-foot poster.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about it now, I mean, that's probably, you say 81, so that's almost 30 years ago. That thing would have to be take up like a mural. It would take up an entire wall.
I had a Lee Mazzilli subway poster from 1980, and it was 4-foot by 10-foot. I would think that Mets, if you did that, Mets poster with all the players' headshots on it, it would be about that size.
So, in retrospect, looking back, you're pleased with the way this came out?
Yeah, I'm pretty pleased. There's always that writer's remorse, I guess, when you finally see the finished product, and you're like, oh, gee, I should have put this in, or
always.
That shouldn't have been in there,
uh-huh.
And stuff like that. But overall, I talked to Ron Swoboda about it a couple weeks ago. He says, you're going to be hypercritical about it because you know what it could and couldn't have been. Just let the readers decide whether it's good or not.
Good advice. We've been talking with David Ferry, author of Total Mets, a definitive encyclopedia of the New York Mets' first half century. David, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Faith and Fear in Flushing advertises itself as a blog for Mets fans who like to read, which works out well because Greg Prince really likes to write, as is evidenced by his forthcoming 4-volume set. Greg will be holding a launch party at Foley's on Saturday, December 15th from noon to 2 p.m., and I might actually make one of my rare forays into New York for this one, and I hope to see you there. So now, here's Greg.
Greg Prince, welcome back to the Baseball Bookshelf.
Glad to be here.
Your new book, your new series of books, comes at a time when the Mets have not been doing well for the last few years. Was this a form of therapy for you?
Almost, I suppose. The genesis of the book project, The Happiest Recap, did come from a place of wanting to sort of accentuate the positive. A few years ago on our blog, Faith and Fear in Flushing, which I write with my friend Jason Fry, I had begun to think about a project that would identify the best games, best wins in Mets history by game number, you know, the best opening day, best second game, and I did that, and it was a lot of fun, and I decided I wanted to kind of keep going, so I sort of reformatted the idea and decided with the 50th anniversary in the air to put it together as the 500 most amazing wins of the first 50 years, and, you know, to sort of tell the story of the franchise, you know, game by game, if you will, the games that, you know, made the difference, and the games where records were set, and the games where personalities were established, and the sort of fun games that we tend to remember. And that's how we have 500 wins and absolutely no losses.
I was going to ask, because some of the games people might consider great games, they might actually have lost. I mean, I guess this is and obviously, with your milestone birthday coming up, you haven't seen all these games yourself.
No, I haven't, but I do feel, you know, I've done a great deal of research on these games, and I feel I've been doing it since I was about 6 or 7 years old when I first started following the Mets. And, you know, one of the great things about being a Mets fan in those days, you know, in the early 70s certainly, was listening to our three announcers, Bob Murphy, Ralph Kiner, and Lindsey Nelson, because they had been there from the beginning, and they were constantly reminding you what it was like from the beginning. So I always felt I was privy to a lot of stories I otherwise would have missed, you know, whether it was about Chu Coleman or Marv Thornberry or Hot Rod Caneal, or even, you know, the less celebrated guys, all of whom, by the way, had great moments and had their winning moments, and they tend to show up in this book. I supplemented that along the way from, you know, probably about age, you know, I don't know, age 9 on, taking books out of my local public library in Long Beach, New York. Every Mets history I could get my hands on. Soon enough, I was, you know, buying up those books and then the ones that came out after it, and formed what I, you know, consider, per Bob Murphy and Lindsey Nelson, Ralph Kiner, my baseball library, as they called it when they were telling us to buy copies of the New Year book. And you know, at some point, the internet came along, which allowed me to look up a box score after box score. And you know, I probably read over every winning box score in Mets history at least 3 times, probably more, in the cases of the games I wrote about, to really get a sense of what was going on. Supplemented that with you know, archival newspaper clippings and anything I could get my hands on to sort of flesh out the idea. So certainly in terms of this first volume, which is 62 to 73, I was only around toward the end of it. You know, I came along in 69 as a Mets fan, and I felt I was really writing from a place of confidence in the early 70s, and by the time I got to the 73 stretch drive, I felt I was, you know, there again. And I think that, for what it's worth, really begins to shine through in the second volume. But as far as what you mentioned about great moments in Mets history, great games that were losses, you know, those losses do show up in their own way. Some of these games were chosen as sort of a winking acknowledgement of that. One of the games I chose, for example, was a game that the first time two Mets hit two home runs in the same win, which was Joe Christopher and Hawk Taylor, which was June 20th, 1964, which not only broke a losing streak, but you know, gave Casey Stengel reason to reset the lineup for the next day, which we tell that story because the next day was June 21st, 1964, which the baseball historian might recognize as the day Jim Bunning threw a perfect game against the Mets, and those guys were both in the lineup, obviously didn't hit any home runs or anything. So we have a story about the longest relief outing in Mets history that Larry Bernarth through, which came about a week after that record was established by, I have to go back and look it up, whether it was Bernarth or Galen Sisko, and that was during the 23-inning game that they lost to the Giants. So, you know, we are forced, if you will, to encounter the fact that there were losses along the way. When I get to 69 and writing about the World Series, it's impossible to get into Game 2 of the World Series without acknowledging that they lost Game 1 and delving into that a bit. So, you know, the losses do come through. It's not all sunshine and roses and denying reality, but the idea was to talk about the best wins and the kinds of games that we as fans kind of walk away from saying, hey, wasn't that something? Wasn't that great? And then we kind of tend to, unless it's incredible, we tend to forget about it, and they linger in the subconscious, and I guess I kind of wanted to bring it out of the subconscious.
Now, the title of the book series, and these are going to be four books of roughly equal length.
I wouldn't be surprised if the latter versions are going to be a little longer, based on the fact I've done most of the work on volume two or second base, and that one because I was there going forward, and especially volume two because that covers the rise to 86. I think that might be a little longer, but yeah, we're with the same number of games, approximately 125.
So the title of the series comes from Bob Murphy, in a sense.
Yeah, in a sense, you know, we dedicated the first volume and really the whole series to the memory of Bob Murphy, because I think he would, when the Mets won, would say, you know, we'll be back with the happy recap. And, you know, I always thought a very unobtrusive, classy way that he was never one of those announcers who called attention to his catchphrases, but they certainly filtered into his work. And you know, he always had a way of making you feel positive and confident about the Mets, even when it was fairly clear that they were not going to win the game. And you know, to me, you were never down 6-0 in the ninth. You know, the Mets were always a couple of batters from getting the bases loaded in the tying run. One batter away in the on deck circle, or you know, however he would phrase it. So, but it never felt he was snowing you. He was just kind of, you know, looking for the best spin to put on things. Never put down the other team. Never said we or us. And I think, you know, personally, I feel I'm the baseball fan I am today in great part because of Bob Murphy, and I think a lot of Mets fans of my vintage and really a couple of generations worth, you know, had to have been influenced as well, you know, to perhaps a lesser extent given the time they spent actively in the booth, though, Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner, who, you know, once he went to TV, wasn't quite doing as much. So, and I think, you know, that for what it's worth, that tradition's carried on in a different way by the likes of Howie Rose and Gary Cohn today. And, you know, the announcers have always been important. You know, every now and then I'll transcribe a call, and almost serves as a Greek chorus to say that this is how these games went down, and this is how we experienced them, unless we happen to be at the ballpark.
Now, in working on these books, do you think you could have done this, relatively speaking, in the pre-internet age?
It would have been very difficult. A lot of what I do, I think a lot of what everybody does, a lot more difficult. I mean, just, you know, I joined Sabre a couple of years ago because I knew I would have access the Sporting News archives, which is a gold mine, and a lot of it is stuff I remember from my Sporting News subscriptions, but I didn't save every clipping. But if you know what to look for, it's there. Obviously, the New York Times is there if you subscribe to it. Google News Archive is just there, and it's a little more difficult to use, it seems, all the time. But you know, find all kinds of supplements to, you know, the box scores, and just, you know, finding the game story quotes and things like that. And the box scores themselves, we live in an age of retro sheet and baseball reference, and, you know, so that's sort of ground zero for this project, and to not have those, I sometimes do look at those box scores and think, you know, when I read an older history of the Mets, when I read, you know, the books that were written around 1969 and the ones that reflected back on the early 60s, you know, think about the guys like Jack Lang and George Vesey and Leonard Coppett and Leonard Schechter all probably went back through old notebooks to put things together, and, you know, went into their newspapers' morgues, and, you know, sometimes I can tell, I've looked at so much of this stuff now, I can tell where facts went wrong and, you know, why people made certain mistakes, but, you know, it's so much easier today. And now, I don't think I would exist as a baseball writer without the internet today, because, you know, I started doing this, I guess it was almost 8 years ago when my partner and I started Faith and Fear, and, you know, we just had this route to entry, like you know, so many other hundreds or thousands of writers who otherwise would have had to have taken up a career trying to get a job at a newspaper or a magazine, and otherwise we were just fans, you know, talking among ourselves. So I can't imagine. But you know, conversely, one of the goals here was to take what was an internet series, what was a blog series, and you know, kind of memorialize it, wouldn't be the right word, but to sort of, you know, enshrine it in a place where people could have it and, you know, put it on their shelves and let it join their baseball library and take it down and, you know, read it again and again, which I don't know, you can send all the links you want. I don't think people are going to do that on the internet.
Now, you mentioned specifically Coppett and Vesey, both of whom published excellent books about the Mets. Faith and Fear in Flushing has a tagline, the blog for Mets fans who like to read. Can you, and you mentioned about, you know, getting every book you could about the Mets when you were younger, can you, what are some of your favorite Mets books?
Well, I guess, you know, I've mentioned a couple of them there. You know, the New York Mets, The Whole Story by Leonard Coppett, you know, is sort of the baseline, I think, for any Mets history, published twice, once in 70, an updated version in 74. Jack Lang's book that came out in 86, and I don't have the updated version, kind of, you know, tells the story from someone who witnessed the first 25 years. I didn't get until a couple of years ago, and again, you know, things like Amazon and eBay made this possible. Leonard Schechter's book, Once Upon the Polo Grounds, just sort of reopened my eyes to what it was like. I've always had a fascination with the Polo Grounds and the New York Giants, but I don't know I ever really fully appreciated the Mets years in the Polo Grounds until I read that book. Again, you know, both Joy in Mudville and A Season in the Sun by George Vesey, Season in the Sun, which was a kind of a retrospective on 1 year as a columnist, but that year was 86, so you got a lot of Mets in there. You know, in later years, you know, the book Mets by the Numbers by John Springer and Matthew Silverman, I thought, like, it was a great way to tell the story of the team. A Magic Summer by Stanley Cohen, which was reissued a few years ago, is a great look back on the 69 book William Reichick wrote, The Amazing Mets 62-69, which again was another. Again, I wanted to be as careful as I could be to just not feel I was, you know, just taking stories I read from there. But like one of the stories in my book about Dick Rustick, the pitcher who came up through a 4-0 shutout and never won again, I think I really understood Dick Rustick because Reichick had interviewed him. So, you know, I could probably be jumping all over the place here. But also the player autobiographies, you know, Tug McGraw's book, which he wrote with Joe Durso, Screwball, was a book I did a book report on three times from 6th grade, 8th grade, and 10th grade until I lost it. And I looked, you know, again, in the pre-internet age, I looked around everywhere to see if it was sold, and I couldn't find it until 1998. I happened to go to a game at Wrigley Field. I wandered down the street afterwards with a friend of mine to a used bookstore, and my friend who knew my quest said, "Hey, look, there's Screwball," and I picked it up again, and a year later, as it happened, I found myself at one of these baseball alumni dinners, and who should be there but Tug McGraw. And I go up to him and I tell him what I just told you about. You know, I did a book report on your book three times in school. And he looked at me and he said, "You're scaring me, man." I always treasure that. So, you know, Keith Hernandez wrote a book, you know, A Diary of the 85 Season called If at First, and I found myself referring to that again. Again, I haven't, you know, I treasure everybody who's gone to the effort of writing a legitimate book about the Mets. You know, since in some cases there's overlap, in some cases it's not full. You know, obviously the Roger Angel collections are fantastic, and Roger Angel is, you know, one of, along with Robert Caro, or, you know, is my favorite writer. But you know, I enjoy having all the perspectives here, and as long as they're not hack jobs, they're valuable.
What's the time frame for the rest of the series?
I hope to have the second volume, which we call Second Base, 1962 to 1986, out sometime in spring training.
I'm sorry, did you say 1962 to
1986? I'm sorry. Thank you for catching that. 1974 to 1986. Uh-huh. Again, like I said, they're all roughly one quarter of the story. You know, picking up where, you know, the You Gotta Believe euphoria begins to wear off, and watching the Mets take their, you know, their dip, and then their precipitous dive, and then, you know, struggle back to until they're champions again. That sometime around in spring training. The third volume, which will cover 87 to 99, and the fourth volume, which I'm calling 2000 and beyond, because I think to call 2000 to 2011 feels a little finite and, quite frankly, a little depressing. Sometime toward the end of the year, again, I have to credit my art director on this. His name is Jim Haynes, a good friend of mine from my various magazine jobs. He did the cover, he did the layout, he did all the little graphic flourishes, and, you know, a big Mets fan, and actually quite helpful in terms of looking over the copy. So, a little of this depends on everybody's availability to get things done. But, you know, like I said, we've been plugging through this in one way or another for the last couple of years. So, 2013, even though the 50th anniversary will technically be over, I'll still be 50 years old. So hopefully have this out before all of it by the end of the year.
And we've been talking with Greg Prince, author of The Happiest Recap, a quartet of books about the 500 best Met games. Greg, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that was the Mets Extra Inning edition of the Bookshelf Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed listening to David Ferry and Greg Prince. I actually have some news of my own book. I'm almost finished with the galleys, putting the finishing touches on the index. But you can actually pre-order 501 Baseball Books Fans Must Read Before They Die from Amazon.com or BN.com, which is the Barnes & Noble website. So I'm looking forward to finally finishing with it and just relaxing for a little bit before dealing with all the things that an author has to deal with in order to promote the book. I hope you're looking forward to it as much as I. And that'll do it for another edition of the Baseball Bookshelf Podcast. Thanks for listening. See you again next time.